I'm Matthew Petty, and this is Intersection. South Miami officials want to break Florida into two states. They claim Tallahassee isn't addressing the challenge of climate change. Central Florida is caught in the crosshairs. Half of the region would fall into the state of North Florida and the other half into South Florida. To discuss South Florida's unique environmental challenges, I'll speak to South Miami Mayor Walter Harris and Stetson University Environmental Sciences Professor Jason Evans. Later in the program, we'll talk about the cultural differences and the political challenges of splitting the state with Rollins College Professor of Urban History Julian Chambliss and Stetson University Political Science Professor T. Wayne Bailey. A conversation about two Floridas, that's ahead on Intersection. Joining me on the phone now is South Miami Vice Mayor Walter Harris. Walter, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
Also in the studio here, we have Jason Evans. He's an environmental sciences professor at Stetson University in DeLand. Jason, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Well, Vice Mayor Harris, I want to start with you. Now, you spearheaded the City of South Miami's resolution to explore the idea of separating Florida into two states. Now, why split the state in two?
Well, speak rather quickly to bring you up to speed why I did what I did. Since World War II, South Florida and North Florida have been at each other's throats, and a number of attempts for separation of North and South Florida have occurred. Basically, North Florida is rural, South Florida is urban, North Florida is conservative, South Florida is liberal, North Florida is like Alabama and Georgia, South Florida is like New York. But the big issue as far as South Florida was concerned was, and is, that South Florida pays roughly 69% of the state's revenue, roughly $15.25 billion out of the $19 billion annual revenue from the state, about 69%. But we're only getting back roughly $12.5 billion, so we're losing $3 billion on that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that alone is reason enough. However, with the absolute unequivocal reality that we're all experiencing firsthand here in South Florida of climate change, rising sea levels, and South Florida especially because we're in porous limestone, so it rises from underneath, we're in a situation that we need to take control and handle our problems without having to go through the unbelievable problems of Tallahassee. And so I thought this is the time to make a move. If ever there was a time, this is it. Because this is real. This is a physical reality, a danger facing all of South Florida. And so the time, I thought, was propitious for us to consider the possibility of a 51st state.
So, Vice Mayor Harris, in the resolution, it says the creation of the 51st state, South Florida, is a necessity for the very survival of the entire southern region of the current state of Florida. So I guess my question is the impact of sea level rise or the projected impact of sea level rise, is it really that dire?
It is direr than anybody had ever even imagined just as recently as a few years ago. The level of sea level is rising faster than anybody could have anticipated. When we have a super high tide, it causes lots and lots of flooding. It's only going to take one major storm to even brush South Florida, not necessarily hit it, not necessarily a hurricane hitting full force, to create tremendous havoc, especially with all the development going on Miami Beach and on the coast of Miami itself. And, I mean, I'll add Fort Lauderdale and Palm Beach, we're all in this together.
Mm-hmm.
But, yes, it is real, and everybody here experiences flooding now when there wasn't, and high tides. And I was a photographer for 45 years. The places I used to take couples to take pictures of with the skyline behind us is now, it used to be sandbars, but they're no longer sandbars. And they're gone forever. And to get even out there now at high tide can't be done. I know firsthand the effects of rising water. And this is just the beginning. At the end of this century, it could rise anywhere from 3 to 6 feet. And a lot of South Florida is 5 feet or less above sea level. So we are in very, very precarious situation.
So when you talk about your concerns about Tallahassee, you know, not paying enough attention to the problems you're describing down in South Florida, where would you say that Tallahassee is lacking in providing funding or planning to mitigate sea level rise in South Florida?
Well, right now it's a matter, it's as incredible as it sounds, it's completely lack of the reality of the entire situation. I mean, it's the governor himself has banned the terms climate change and global warming and rising sea levels. He doesn't want to hear about it. That in itself speaks volumes. But in order to get anything back from Tallahassee, it requires a great deal of lobbying and fighting. And we don't get, we put in $15 billion and we get back about $12.5 billion, you know, under the best of conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is a fight, and the game rules change all the time. It's just tough. If Tallahassee is pure bureaucracy, and we don't have time to play the games any longer, in my opinion, and not only in my opinion, in reality, we don't have time to play the games.
I should point out, too, just for the record, that Governor Scott, when he was asked whether he had actually banned the use of the term climate change, he said that was not true. In any case, I want to bring in Professor Jason Evans. Professor Evans, how does Miami and South Florida differ from the rest of the state when you're talking about the risks posed by sea level rise?
Yeah, so they're flat. I mean, that's really the big issue that we actually have in South Florida. For example, like with the Everglades, it's kind of this huge area that's down there. You can go in kind of 50 miles inland and you're still only at 3 feet above sea level. So within areas, for example, like Miami, yeah, there's areas there that are only 5 feet above sea level. And then, of course, with the porous rock that we've already talked about, that even if you were to build things like seawalls and levees that work in other areas of the world, that's not going to work in South Florida because basically the sea will just rise from underneath and then will flood. We've had just a huge amount of people in South Florida as well. And so just the amount of people that are at risk, that's what also really kind of makes South Florida just extremely unique, is that we have a lot of people that are in this very, very low-lying area. And so the risks are just great. And so we're talking about, yeah, with issues that we're already seeing, like with streets that are flooding, stormwater pipes that will flow the wrong way with a high tide. Saltwater intrusion of wells is another issue that's a big concern within Southeast Florida. Pretty much, they're really like the canaries in the coal mine for the entire United States, frankly.
Some of that land, too, has been reclaimed from the ocean already, right?
Yeah. So there's, of course, there's a legacy of, you know, draining and swamps and mangroves. And so there's this whole legacy of what's actually gone on in Southeast Florida. So that, of course, makes the problem worse. We have a lot of people that are just in very, very low-lying areas.
The resolution talks about the porous nature of the land, as you alluded to, Professor Evans. When you talk about flooding from high tides, that kind of thing, are you already seeing that water sort of come up and create surface flooding?
Yes, absolutely. Within some of these areas, for example, within the Keys, for example, I've actually worked a lot within the Florida Keys. And then within these extremely high tides, you'll actually see the water kind of boiling up just along the side of the street sometimes. It's just coming up through the limestone. Yes, we are in fact seeing this already.
And in South Florida, down in the Keys, as you talk about, what are you doing to work with the county and the local government officials there to try and, you know, plan for, mitigate against this kind of sea level rise?
Yeah, so really what we're trying to do is, for one, just trying to understand the risks. And so, for example, really looking at roads that are at risk, looking at stormwater drainage that's at risk, looking at critical facilities, really just getting a good handle on, okay, where are the really extremely at-risk areas?
Mm-hmm.
Then once we understand that, then, okay, what can we do to actually mitigate? Some can be infrastructure mitigation. I know in Miami they're using a lot of pumping right now, so there's been a lot of infrastructure that's gone in. Then also trying to understand, okay, where are the areas in terms of kind of new growth, but then also saying, okay, well, this is low. This can be too expensive to really for the government to really have to really protect. So then also trying to keep out the new growth from areas that are going to be extremely vulnerable. So this is the ongoing planning that we're doing.
When you talk about pumping and infrastructure, whether it be something to keep the water out or channel that water, that's all quite expensive, is it not?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've actually heard some stats. So within Miami-Dade County, they're actually spending, I believe it's close to $300 million right now just on pumps and with upgrades to actually try to keep out the tide water. So yeah, this gets to be extremely expensive. And so this is something, when we start to actually think of the future and how we're going to plan against this, that it's extremely important to think about, okay, when we if we actually have homes that are going to be in harm's way, this is expensive to really protect.
What are other states, other coastal states doing to plan for sea level rise?
It's really kind of a mixed bag. What we often see is really areas when they get hit by a hurricane. So, for example, up in New Jersey, up in New York, they got really hit hard with the aftermath of the hurricane up there.
That, Superstorm Sandy.
That's exactly right. Once you get hit hard by these events, then that's when we often see really this planning happening. So there's been a lot going on up in New Jersey looking at a dune restoration. Then up in Long Island, there's actually been some areas where and said, okay, this is too expensive to even really protect. We shouldn't have people living in these areas. There's actually been some buyouts. So those areas, but there's other areas where we're still kind of behind. So it's really a mixed bag.
Vice Mayor Harris, if I could just bring you back into the conversation, what would you say that Tallahassee needs to do to get you to change your stance? I mean, is there something they could do for you to say, okay, let's back off this resolution. We don't need to create that 51st state after all?
Well, our situation... First of all, I did give you a wrong statistic. It's actually the budget is $22 billion. South Florida gives $15.25 billion. I just happened to look at my notes, and I do appreciate all the information. All that information was very, very well said and very, very true. A point that was hit upon lightly is the freshwater, saltwater intrusion and the problems it's going to cause. We've tried to create the 51st state of South Florida would actually follow the South Florida Water Management District, which goes up through the middle of the state to Orlando, so that we'd still be getting fresh water. But that's still just a temporary situation. The reality is we're going to have to start creating desalination plants, which is a major problem. And what Tallahassee's going to have to do is put South Florida on their map and allow South Florida to deal with its problems without going through committees or being completely set aside. And most of the money, he alluded to the $300 million. That's Miami Beach. Miami Beach alone has spent that on the pumps to keep the floodwaters, high tides, from flooding Alton Road and other streets. So they pump it out, and they've made pumps that are just one way. They can't open from the sea, so the high tide can't come back and push the water onto the streets. Unfortunately, right now, that problem is creating serious problems in Biscayne Bay, where all the refuse and everything is being pumped into. However, getting to the point of Tallahassee, there's issues, and I don't know all the answers. That's why I'm trying to create a committee to find out what's best to be done to either create a state or create a meaningful committee in Tallahassee to deal with this absolute unequivocal reality, which basically, no matter what he says, he's denying somewhat. And he's always said he's not a scientist, and I truly believe that. And anyway, the biggest issue coming up will be fresh water for the large population. And, I mean, this is a worldwide problem, fresh water, but we're going to be coming up against it rather quickly with the saltwater intrusion going into the aquifer.
You're listening to Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. I'm talking to South Miami Vice Mayor Walter Harris. We're talking about the idea of creating a 51st state and splitting Florida in two. Also in the studio here is Stetson University Professor of Environmental Sciences Jason Evans. You can join us online on Facebook. Send us a tweet at WMFE Orlando. We'll continue the conversation after a break about two Floridas, and we'll be joined by Julian Chambliss, Professor of Urban History at Rollins College, and also by Wayne Bailey, Professor of Florida Politics from Stetson University. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. We're talking about a proposal to split Florida into two states, North and South Florida. And to talk more about the idea, I'm joined now by Julian Chambliss. He's a professor of urban history at Rollins College. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And also on the phone joining us is Wayne Bailey, professor of Florida politics from Stetson University. Professor Bailey, thank you for joining us.
I'm pleased that I could be part of the conversation this afternoon.
Well, Professor Bailey, I want to start with you. How would South Florida go about creating a 51st state?
Well, first of all, one would have to note that this is a process that has not been resorted to since 1863. It would require under the U.S. Constitution, the authorization by the state legislature, and it would also require an act of Congress. Really, it's technically not so daunting because it's a matter of these resolutions, but I think something more than half of the states of the U.S. have proposed some form of secession or division, and the politics of this concept raise improbable and probably impossible barriers to going at all in this direction.
When was the last time something like this was actually carried out successfully?
1863, I believe it was. West Virginia seceded from Virginia.
Do you think Senator Nelson or Senator Rubio would be interested in creating a separate state in South Florida?
Well, since Senator Rubio is from South Florida, I think he would be somewhat insulted by this provision. And actually, what we have, because of the reapportionment decisions of the U.S. Supreme Court, South Florida has the mass of representation in both the U.S. House of Representatives and the Florida legislature. So actually, if the South Florida representation got together, they could rule the state legislature in every period. Though right now, I think the president of the Senate is from Orlando, and the Speaker of the House is from Brevard County, far from South Florida.
Theoretically, say this idea made it all the way through Congress and became a reality, what would happen to the United States flag?
Well, it would probably have to be re-sewn. As you know, the last time I guess this happened was the admission of Hawaii and Alaska. And again, that was a political trade. The idea of permitting a state to have two additional, let's say, senators who would tend to be Democrats, if we're talking about South Florida, I think would be altogether unacceptable to the Republican Party leadership, for example. It would require quite a large number of transactions. And of course, what's happening is that most political scientists are saying today, instead of moving toward fragmentation, what we need to do is to try to find some way of moving toward regionalization and joining states together. For example, Florida and Georgia right now are in an awful water war, and the water resources issue for those two states are relatively uncoordinated, and most specialists would say we have to find some way of finding a solution not to fragment, but to bring states together.
Well, Julian Chambliss, urban history professor at Rollins College, I want to bring you on the conversation. Could you talk a little bit about the cultural differences between North and South Florida? I mean, we heard from South Miami Vice Mayor Walter Harris saying that North and South has kind of been at each other's throats since World War II. I mean, what's it like? Do you see that split, you know, right down the middle in black and white, or is it a little more nuanced than that?
I think it's a little bit more nuanced, but the gravity, the sort of like polar opposite effect is understandable from a historical context. When you think about Florida's history, we're very late into the state in the 1840s. North Florida, very much associated with the South. You know, at the time of the Civil War, Jacksonville is really strongly a Confederate space. After that, the state has been, I think, grew slowly in that period after the war. The development of the urban landscape has really been sort of shore along the coastline, then further development in Central Florida, and then South Florida, of course, skyrocketing after World War II. And then World War II is really a break point. Florida was an incredibly important training ground for armed forces in the United States that really sort of like amplified this dichotomy. On the one hand, you had, even before the war, a large number of transplants that came down to places like Miami. The whole Art Deco period in Miami attracted a lot of people from places like New York, the Mid-Atlantic region. So you have a history and a legacy of that sort of like northerner experience there. And you also have that in Central Florida. You mm-hmm. look at places like Winter Park, Winter Garden. Those were seasonal residents who settled in the area, allowed back and forth. Their whole snowbird pattern is firmly established. At the same time, North Florida, Jacksonville, the Panhandle, very strongly tied together socially, politically, economically. That identity is actually been really very clear from much of the 20th century. And people might forget, remember this from the the late 80s, North Florida struggled with trying to sort of create an identity for itself. And the state struck this idea of the First Coast as a way to try to give it some sort of identity, as the sort of colloquial identity was like, well, it's sort of like South Georgia. We say this in a kind of divisive way, but that is the case. It's very much associated with that Southern aesthetic. At the same time, over time, it's been quite clear that Miami and South Florida are very much associated with the cultural landscape of the Caribbean and South America, Miami being, of course, often referred to as the gateway to Latin America. And a sort of trans-American, transnational identity really does define the space. Mm-hmm. Our culture, our identities in South Florida are really important. And now today you look at Orlando, and that's really a sort of like break point.
Orange County, under this map proposed by this resolution in South Miami, Orange County would be the northernmost border. It would sort of cut right across the middle there. But where do we fit? I mean, does Central Florida have its own distinct identity separate from South and North? Are we kind of more South Florida, or do we identify with North Florida? How do you see us sort of gelling in this mix?
Well, I think we are at that kind of pivot point. And so there are elements of Central Florida that really do correspond more to the North, Northwest, Northeast persona. So of course, Central Florida still has a strong sort of connection to the cattle industry, for instance, or that kind of identity. And at the same time, over the last 20 to 25 years, you've seen a rapid rise in the Hispanic population in Central Florida, and the internationalization that has been associated with the rise of our sort of like tourism industry, which is really international. If you think about the people who come to Orlando International Airport, is indeed a truly international airport that brings visitors from South America, from Europe. You have seasonal visitors that really sort of like help define the area. So many of our bedroom communities have a distinct transnational, as I say, mm-hmm. and international flavor to them. And much of our cultural landscape is dominated by Disney, which has a really global brand identity. And that really does help define Orlando in that kind of global context.
Theoretically, what would you say would happen, along that border between Orange and Seminole County, say this were to happen?
I think Orlando might be the one place where this sort of split might not have that big of a effect, right? We are still, at some level, a kind of hybrid space. It depends on what part of Orlando you're in, how much you feel our South Florida element, right? I think this is one of the things, especially in Central Florida, especially in the Orlando metropolitan area, where the identities are somewhat segmented in a way. If you take a sort of 50,000 feet view, you can see the blended nature. But many of our personal and actually sort of like day-to-day interactions are really constrained by social interactions, right? So we don't necessarily blend over and see the different faces of Central Florida or the Orlando face as much as we could.
Professor Wayne Bailey, other states have also talked about secession around policy issues, fracking, for example, at the center of a New York movement to split, and also Maine talking about a splitting over taxes. I'm wondering if these secession bids are always issue-driven, or are there other things at play here?
Well, I think we would be doing a disservice if we didn't mention the Conch Republic, mm-hmm. the most celebrated secession symbolically, and I guess in good fun, that we are dealing with is the feeling by Key West and Monroe County with reference to South Florida. They act and in some ways are able to socially present themselves as independent. I think probably the fact that the South Miami Commission has us talking about this issue is probably the most creative and positive aspect of this whole issue. It certainly will not happen legally or politically, but if it mobilizes citizens to become more involved in elections, in recruiting candidates that seem to understand the kind of issues that have been discussed so thoughtfully by Professor Evans and others today.
I would like to say that you talk about some of the issues that are driving this, from a historic standpoint, it does make a certain sense that South Florida, we just always had a real concern around conservation. Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, a Miami resident, Miami environmental figure, very important in terms of promoting the idea of conservation and environmentalism. The questions of water, the questions, even early in the 20th century, a figure like Elvis Cole, we don't talk about that name very often, but preserving the Everglades, that was part of the narrative around Florida's identity broadly, and that's really been infused into the South Florida experience. So it makes perfect sense that at a critical time where the rest of the country is talking about climate change and perhaps the politics doesn't seem to be reacting so quickly, that tradition would kick in and you would see this kind of a deep engagement with the issue, because that is something that people in South Florida have always done.
Well, South Miami Vice Mayor Walter Harris, is that what you're hoping to achieve from this? I mean, if you can't actually create a 51st state?
The dialogue is a very, very good point and something we are trying to achieve, and that's one of the reasons I want a committee to be formed. The way it was set up, by the way, was Orange and Seminole County would be part of South Florida. That should sit well with you guys. The point being, you know, I'm aware of the almost impossible task of creating a 51st state. I mean, I've heard it from day one. The only difference is this is such an unprecedented situation that it needs to be explored. We're talking about the end of South Florida if it's not dealt with. And also, there are also the other political issues that have always existed, as everybody's referred to. So, yes, but to get the dialogue going is great. I mean, to have everybody on this show right now, it's just amazing. So I feel that we are on the right track by exploring this.
I've been speaking to South Miami Vice Mayor Walter Harris. We've been talking about the idea of creating a 51st state and the imminent threat of sea level rise and climate change. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity. Thank you very much. Thank you all.
And also joining us on the phone was Wayne Bailey, Professor of Florida Politics from Stetson University. Thank you very much.
And you're welcome. I just hope that this conversation will change the rhetoric. That seems to be the answer, and I do agree these are alarming trends, and that we need to try to have the kind of colloquy that will present some solutions.
And also in the studio here at WMFE, Julian Chambliss, Professor of Urban History at Rollins College. Julian Chambliss, thank you very much for coming in.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And also Jason Evans, Environmental Sciences Professor from Stetson University. Jason, thanks very much.
Absolutely. Thank you.
The conversation about what's happening in Florida continues online at wmfe.org/intersection. There you can sign up for our weekly podcast. Stay connected to Intersection and other programs from 90.7 News on our free mobile app. Search for WMFE on the Google Play or Apple Store for live streaming or on-demand listening of programs like Intersection wherever you are. Support for Intersection comes from Florida Hospital and from our listeners. Our program producer is Brendan Byrne. You can follow him on Twitter at Brendan L. Byrne. I'm Matthew Petty. Follow me on Twitter at Matthew_Petty. Thanks for listening.